Real Life, the program that talks about the life of real estate in the Hamptons and the North Fork. The people, the places, and the things that are the pulse and heartbeat of life on the East End. And now, Associate Broker of Sotheby's International Realty, your host, John Christopher.
Hi, this is John Christopher for Real Life, and today I have as my guest Annette Azan, who's an interior designer. Hi, Annette, how are you?
Hi, John. Thanks for having me on
your
show.
Oh, it's a delight having you. You know, I really like the work that you do, so I'm very honored to have you on the program. We met originally at an open house where I thought you just did this fantastic job with interior design. But let me ask you the question, what led you into design?
Well, most of my career, I was a fashion executive and have been working in the visual world for my whole life. My last fashion gig was working for Donna Karan running Urban Zen, both here and in the city, and I started to delve more into home furnishings. But my whole career, I had been what I call the straight eye, not the queer eye,
Not the crooked eye.
Yeah, not the crooked eye. But I've been doing people's homes for free. I've been, you know, because visual world, there's not a lot of difference between what we wear and how we live. And so I dived deep in 6 years ago and took the plunge, and it felt right, and I am loving it and finding much more pleasure in giving my clients a much more longer term positive experience than clothing.
Wow. Well, you know, the thing is, we all have to find our passion, and obviously this has become a passion for you.
Yeah, by far.
By far.
Yes.
So let me say, did you notice that you had an artistic eye as a child? Did your folks or your mom say to you, "Hey, Annette, you really have an artistic eye"?
I come from a very creative family. My mother being also a psychic, so I was used to. I grew up around energy, and around what inanimate objects meant in terms of energy, and so I was able to use that knowledge that I grew up with and my mother's knowledge to take it into the interior design world, which means that I don't just put up pretty pictures. I'm really watching how people respond to these energy vortexes called our home.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is fascinating. Now, one of the things you have a saying, and I quote, "Things in the material world are just stories disguised as objects." Tell us more about that.
Yeah, again, because we feel like everything is solid.
And it's really not.
Everything is moving. Everything is just vibration. And what happens is, even though we may think we're making unconscious choices with where we live, how we live, our homes, the things we choose to put in it, it's actually a reflection of what's happening in our interior world. So I like to start from a place with my client, finding out what's happening in the interior world, seeing where they want to go, or seeing if what they're living now is a reflection of who they are. Because a lot of times it isn't.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So when you sit down with a client, how long does it take you to get a grasp of what they're about?
It depends on the client. There are some that are so open and ready for me to come in. It's at speed. You know, it's so fast and so wonderful, and can just roll along. And then there's others that have a lot of fear around it, of letting go of what is. And a lot of times at the beginning, it is about the letting go process, because a lot of times it's about scaling what they have down. You know, sometimes I'm working with houses that are filled with things.
Right.
And so we have to kind of, you know, fetter through that.
So do you sometimes have resistance from these people?
I mean, absolutely.
Saying, no, I can't part with Aunt Martha's, teacups. So
a lot of it is trust. They have to learn to trust me to guide them. And so I guide them through a process. It's very personal. And, you know, I end up having deep relationships with all my clients because of that process. Yeah.
Right. Well, that's it. You have to get to know them. I mean, how can you service them without knowing them?
Yeah.
But that is interesting. I had an architect tell me that the home is a womb with a view. Do you agree with that statement?
Not always. So it sometimes is. Yeah. Sometimes it's a cell with a view or a cell without a view, because sometimes you're trapped in your home. I see a lot of times people are trapped in the past. You know, everything is from their past lives, and they wonder why they can't move forward. So I wouldn't call that a womb.
No,
at all.
So are you saying, like, if you have photographs of loved ones that have passed away, does that... How do you come...
So interesting. I was having that conversation an hour ago with someone about photographs, because I have two photographs of my kids in a private place where I see them, and for a very specific reason. It does keep you in the past. If it is out there and on display, I can tell you it does. Yeah.
So what do? You put them, like, in a special area? Is that the advice that you offer? Yeah. You sit to your clients, okay, if you want to have the picture of your mother who passed away 35 years ago, put her over here?
Yeah, I think honoring family is really important. And I think and that's why anything that is special or precious should never be in a box in your basement, downstairs, or in your attic, because you're not honoring it. So same thing with photographs. Like, to select a separate space, honoring all your family members in a very beautiful way, it can be private, doesn't have to be on display for everybody.
Well, that's funny. The interesting thing is the other day I went up into my attic and I came across a bunch of boxes with the photos. So my question is, do you throw away these boxes? Because, I mean, how often do you look at the photos in the boxes in the attic?
The wonderful thing about today's world, we have technology and we can scan those photos into books and actually have them on your bookshelf. And that's something that I can guide my customers to do, outsourcing. And it's wonderful because talk about stories. You've got them in a book. You can just take them off your shelf at any time.
That's a great accessible idea. Instead of having all the photos sitting up there, because I've gone into a number of houses and, you know, people have their pictures on the walls, and it becomes, I don't know the families per se, but it's almost distracting, where if you go into a house, and especially if you're selling your house, you know, one of the things I say is declutter, you know, that don't have the personal belongings out there, even though they mean something to you, because people have to envision living in your home that you're selling.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of people don't even know how much energy their things are taking away from them until they walk into another space and they suddenly are able to take an out-breath instead of just an in, like, because there's expanse. There's empty wall space. That's important. You don't have to have something on every wall.
Right. It's I know exactly what you're saying because... one of the things, I went and visited a friend, and they had in the bathroom all the pictures. In fact, there was one of my pictures was up there. We had visited them, and I thought, "Oh, that's nice. You're in the bathroom. You get to see yourself again." But then, and when I got home, I said, "Oh, I have this bathroom that has no pictures." But then I said to myself, "You know, I like it with no pictures. You know, just the sanctuary, so to speak. You know, so." Let's talk about, you also do staging, right?
I do.
So the rule of thumb in real estate is to keep it neutral. Do you have a different philosophy? And if so, can you tell us in a short amount of time?
I always have a different philosophy.
Well, we have to keep it short because we're going to have to wrap this up.
Okay. So it depends on the home I go in. Usually a lot of the new pop-up homes, you know, they don't have a lot of personality. So if there's not a lot of personality, you don't want to go with neutral, and they have no energy when they go in there, especially if it hasn't been lived in.
Hmm.
You know, where it hasn't had a family's kind of imprint on it, then I wouldn't say just go neutral. Harmonize so that there's not a strong sense of one style, but then you need to kind of amp it up a little bit. If you're going into a house that is older, that has wonderful details, you'll want to kind of tone it down because the house has a strong sense of its own unique style without anything.
Right. Yeah. Understood. How can someone get in touch with you?
Well, I have a website. It's AnnetteAzan.com. That's A-Z-A-N. My email is there, or my business phone number is 914-830-3181.
Annette, it's been a delight having you on the program. This is John Christopher. We'll be right back with my next guest after this short break, photographer extraordinaire Jonathan Morse.
Support for 88.3 comes from Sotheby's International Realty, local experts worldwide. With over 100 international offices, Sotheby's has four Hamptons locations in Southampton, Bridgehampton, Easthampton, and Sag Harbor. Learn more at john.christopher@sotheby'shomes.com.
Welcome back to Real Life, and this is your host, John Christopher, and today I have photographer extraordinaire, Jonathan Morse. Hi, Jonathan. How are you today?
Hi, John. Great to be here.
Likewise. I'm glad you're here. Let's start out. I know you're a well-renowned photographer, and you've had an interesting journey getting to this point, but I'm always fascinated by people's life journeys. Can you give us a little history? I understand that at one point you were a developer.
Well, my photographic career started probably before you were born.
Okay.
When my older brother Albert, now deceased, built a darkroom in the attic. And I'm talking I know you'd never know this from looking at it, me, but we're talking about the 1940s.
And in those— That's unbelievable.
In those days, we used pre-war cameras, German cameras mostly.
Hasselblads or?
Rolleiflex was
what Rolleiflex,
my brother
right. Okay.
fancied, and I think I had a Praktika. And we took, we used black and white film, we developed it in the dark room, and made prints. And so I guess I started when I was about 7 or 8. Then I went to Choate School when I was 12 and got my first professional assignments.
In photography?
As a photographer for the Choate News.
at the school?
At the school.
Right.
And I had a speed graphic press camera, which was about as big as I was. And I shot sports and clubs and stuff. And
Did you feel like the bug got you then? Was that?
Yeah, and I developed it in the school dark room. And so wherever I went in those days, there were dark rooms. I went to Harvard. They had a dark room. I went in the Army, and they had a dark room. And so I was always taking pictures and developing them. And then I went to the Harvard Graduate School of Design and became an architect. And so I—
So you put photography on the back burner at that point?
Put photography on the back burner. But I always took pictures and kept up with photography and photographed our projects, building projects and so forth. Then when I retired, I started shooting this television show with my friend George Mittendorf called From a Sag Harbor Kitchen. And that, of course, was television and computers and editing. And no printing, no developing. And so when the digital photography came in around the year 2000, many photographers of my age just headed directly for the exits because there was no film. They were unfamiliar with computers. That Photoshop was a nightmare. And so they left. And I just jumped back in with both feet because I'd been making electrical images and I felt very comfortable working my Mac. So I got Photoshop and a 1-megapixel camera and started taking pictures. And there were a lot of retired photographers out here. One especially became my best friend, Jimmy Moore. He was a photographer who was a photographer for Harper's Bazaar during the great 70s and 80s. He worked as an assistant to Avedon, and he had many covers on...
Was he like a mentor?
Yeah, it was great because I ran into him at a show I had in Southampton, my first show. And he came up to me and he said, "Hi, my name is blah, 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 and I'm very interested in digital photography." So I said, "Hey, that's great. You know, here's my card. Call me up." Never heard from him. So I was at a party, cocktail party, given by my friend Ash Hawkins. And Toulamon was there. And I said to Ash, "Who's this little guy that keeps coming up to me and introducing himself, but I can't get his name?" He said, "Oh, God, that's Jimmy Moore. He's a great photographer. Let me introduce you to him." So Jimmy took me under his wing and helped me, especially with strobe lighting, which was unknown to me. And I helped him with his computer, and we became best friends. And he was very encouraging and also a great friend. And so that's when I sort of got back into it. And since then, the computers, the Photoshop, the digital cameras have all developed. And now I find myself having been a professional photographer for 16 years. I don't know how that happened.
But it's, well, because you have the talent. It's there.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Exactly. Let me ask you a question. You had mentioned going to Harvard. Now, you went to graduate school at the School of Design at Harvard. Did you feel that education helped you in your artistic endeavors, and if so, how so?
Well, yes, because the learning architecture is a very interesting profession because it combines art and technology and has done so for the last 500 years. So one becomes comfortable with learning technological means to express an artistic and functional program. And I think this familiarity with technology has been very useful because modern photography is extremely high tech. And so I think the kind of person that is used to combining art and technology together will thrive. For example, the series of portraits I'm doing right now are very, very detailed, very high resolution, you might say, more high resolution than film.
Is it a different series than in the past?
Yeah, this is a new series I'm working on right now, which I don't have a title for it, but I'd like to call it Self-Portraits of Artists by Jonathan Morse, because they're not self-portraits of me, thanks God, but they're self-portraits I take of artists, and we sort of collaborate on them together. So the pictures are very simple. They just show the face of the artist, and the idea is that the technical and photographic elements disappear, and the personality
comes through.
So,
wow. You know, I saw, is that like part the series you had In His Own Light? Is that part of that series?
Yeah, well, that series, In His Own Light, I started about 10 years ago. And that was also an idea to shoot mature artists and writers. But the In His Own Light part derives from the idea of shooting them in their location. And it was fun to do, and it made it easier to get subjects. But when I reviewed all those pictures, I felt that adding the location did not add anything
to it,
to the understanding the artist.
How can someone get in contact with you?
Well, they just go to my website.
And that is?
Photomorse.com.
Photomorse.com.
And then
that's M-O-R-S-E.
Right. And then they'll see my email, which is jmorse2@optimum.net.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on, Jonathan. This is John Christopher for Real Life, and we'll be right back with our next guest, Carl Washwick of the Washwick Insurance Agency and Sheila Lyons, estate planning attorney extraordinaire. We'll be right back. This is John Christopher, and we're back here again with two lovely guests that I have, and that is Carl Washwick of the Washwick Insurance Agency, and also Sheila Lyons, who is an estate planning attorney. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Glad to be here, John.
Yeah. You know, I've had you guys on before, you know, talking individually, but then I thought, why not have you guys come back together? Because, you know, the two of you almost overlap each other. One of the things that we had spoken about last time around is talking about that Medicare does not cover long-term care. Can you guys, Carl, you want to elaborate?
I'll lead off. Medicare doesn't, Medicare covers medical expenses generally. You're getting better, the treatment's working, or you needed the treatment to keep you from getting worse. But there are some things that it does not cover. For example, skilled nursing facility. In order to be, Medicare will cover up to 100 days in a skilled nursing facility only if it follows an inpatient stay of 3 days. Now, you can be in the hospital for 3 days eating the green beans and jello, sleeping in the bed, and not be an inpatient.
How does that happen? That doesn't
Hospitals have what's called observational status.
Huh.
Depending on your diagnosis, you're there, but you're not listed as an inpatient. And it has to do, which I won't get into, Medicare auditing the diagnoses.
So if you're admitted to the hospital, you're not necessarily...
Necessarily.
Admitted.
Admitted. So if you're going from there to the skilled nursing facility, Medicare doesn't cover that at all. 3 day inpatient.
Wow.
So a stupid question, but it's not. It's a really relevant question is my Uncle Fred an inpatient? That matters.
Right.
That matters.
Well, how would you know, the average person even know this? They're happy that...
Well, hopefully they're listening to this radio station.
Right, right, exactly.
Now they know.
Right.
But how would they know?
Right. Sheila, can you add anything to that?
Well, I'm very glad to hear him discussing this because very few people do know about this. And the Center for Medicare Advocacy in Connecticut years ago brought a class action lawsuit for this very purpose, that so many people... I say to my clients when they come in and they want to discuss elder law and Medicare and Medicaid, I'll always say, if you're in the hospital, make sure you're admitted. But we're in a bed, just as he said. But you're not admitted. It's all semantics, and it's all the paperwork they fill out. And if you don't fill out the proper paperwork, you could be in that hospital 6 days, go upstairs, get a patient review instrument, something called a PRI, which rates whether you need custodial care or skilled care. And if you rate that you need skilled care, you still won't get it because technically you only have 1 day in the hospital, even though you've been there for six.
Wow.
Most people don't know, so I'm very impressed that, you know, you brought that up. Really, it's very important.
It matters. And one of the other things, okay, for example, I had a client, the husband was in the hospital, needed infusions. They gave Mrs. a quickie course in infusions, sent her home. Not covered. I got a frantic phone call because the medication was not covered by Medicare at all. And the gentleman was a retired police officer, so he had Medicare and the city medical supplement. Medicare didn't cover it, neither does a supplement.
Wow.
Now, that was something that she should have asked about on the discharge planning.
But how would she know?
Again, hopefully listening to the radio
station.
Listen
to this radio program.
That's right. But you talk to the discharge planner. The discharge planner is your friend. It's not that when you're getting admitted, they're there with the clipboard. They're not trying to rush you out of there. They want to make sure that when they wheel you to the front of the building, there's somebody there to pick you up. And the treatment, just ask, will this be covered?
Right, right.
You know, it's not what you ask that matters. It's what you don't know enough to ask.
I tell my clients sometimes the questions are more important than the answers.
Yes.
And the other thing is, when you go to a nursing home for skilled care, people get confused and they often get very angry about this. You're there for up to 100 days. Medicare made a change a few years ago that they're paid retrospectively, the nursing homes, because there was some abuse of things. So they have to prove that you're staying at a level where you need skilled care. Now, you may get denied. You have appeal the rights there, too. There was a case called Jim A. versus Sebelius. Kathleen Sebelius, who used to be the head of HEW. Mm-hmm. The Medicare criteria was supposedly if you plateaued, if you stopped improving, you wouldn't get up to 100 days. Jimmy versus Sebelius, which once again was brought by the wonderful Center for Medicare Advocacy in Connecticut, said that if you would decline without the care, you're supposed to continue. Many times I'll call up some nursing home, they don't even know about that. And the other thing is people don't always know what kind of Medicare they have. There's traditional Medicare where you buy a supplemental policy. That's the best kind to have. A lot of other people have policies that come through what I call HMO Medicare. And you see them on TV. They have a lot of commercials, a lot of things. They look wonderful if you need eyeglasses or vitamins. But when you need 100 days, many, I'm not saying all the time, but it's more likely with traditional Medicare that you'll be more likely to get more days. And also, if you're in a nursing home and you haven't gotten through the 5 years, there are ways to protect your assets. One very important way to do it is called promissory note planning. We had a 91-year-old lady who sold her co-op unit for $221,000. She'd never gotten through the five-year look-back. She went into a nursing home. And we were able to save, based on her situation, $100,000 of the $221,000. Now, it's not the whole thing, but it's sure better than nothing. Better than nothing.
Absolutely.
And people don't always know about these things because, once again, they'll let the hospital or some organization, not that they're not trying to help, but certain people, depending on their situation, need to protect their assets. You don't always get that if you don't go to someone specifically to personally review your situation. As he was saying, people don't know the questions to ask. So they don't know they're not getting, and even well-meaning people helping them don't always know the questions because these rules change constantly.
So it's always in flux is what you're saying.
It's always in flux. And when you go for home care, which he was mentioning, which is very, very important, there are resource criteria and income criteria. But a few years ago, Medicaid came up with a wonderful plan called the Surplus Income Trust. And if you're over the amount of income that Medicaid lets you have and you need to get care in the community, there are ways to set up what's called a Surplus Income Trust with pooled trusts, which are established by the state and approved by the state. There's about 15 of them. You put your excess income in every month. They pay all your bills for you. Now, it's a pain in the neck to have to send it in, but it's sure better than if you don't have a pooled income trust, Surplus Income Trust, you have to spend your excess money on the aid, and only then do they pay.
Interesting. Now, we're speaking of Medicare. You also do, Carl, you also do regular insurance policies. Is there anything people need to know if they just have regular insurance?
Regular?
Well, when I say regular insurance, I'm saying, like, instead of having Medicare, we'll say a 40-year-old person, you know, suffers the situation instead of, like you mentioned, I guess he was retired at the time.
If you have a 40-year-old with non-Medicare insurance, whether it's through an employer or individual.
Right.
Basically, for non-Medicare insurance, what the ACA, the health care reform, did was level the playing field on benefits. There's only two variables with insurance now. There's only two. Okay.
What are they?
What is covered is covered. Doesn't matter. There are no exclusions, one company, no extras.
Right.
What's covered is covered. The only two variables are, how is it covered? First dollar, which is almost gone, little copays, or big deductibles. But the same services are covered.
Gotcha.
And the big one is, by whom can you get, or from whom can you get the services?
Right.
Network. Well, my doctor doesn't take my plan.
Then what happens?
10 years ago, people used to come to me and say, do you have a plan that I can afford that has all my doctors in it? And my answer was, yes, I do.
Now?
5 years ago, it was pick one. You want to afford it or do you want your doctors in it? Now, it's this is the market. Let's see where you fit.
Wow, that's fascinating. You know, it's great, guys, having both of you on, Carl Washwick and Sheila Lyons. Carl, tell us how we can get in touch with you to answer some of the insurance questions that I'm sure you've raised.
Excellent. Phone number 631-369-0888, or I'm on the web at Washwick, easiest Polish name you ever spelled, washwick.com.
Dobra. And Sheila Lyons, who's a wonderful, obviously, we know she's a wonderful estate planning attorney. How can someone get in touch with you, Sheila?
My main office is in Garden City on 7th Street, and I can be reached at 516-877-1965. And I do also see people in an office in Hampton Bays.
That's fantastic.
This is John Christopher for Real Life on Peconic Public Broadcasting, 88.3, right here in Southampton, New York. By the way, if you're interested in hearing this program again or previous ones, you can go to peconicpublicbroadcasting.org and subscribe to the podcast. Until next time, looking forward to seeing you soon, and have a safe journey.
You have been listening to Real Life, the program that talks to the people, places, and things that are the pulse and heartbeat of real estate on the East End. Your host has been John Christopher, broker associate with Sotheby's International Realty. Your producer and engineer is Kyle Lynch, theme music by John Christopher. Questions and comments can be emailed to john.christopher@sotheby'shomes.com. Real Life is also brought to you in part by LEAP Compliance, HR's one-stop solution for sexual harassment prevention training and policies. All employers in the New York State are now required to train all employees annually, no matter the size of the company. For more information, discriminationpreventiontraining.com or 646-216-8038.